Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sawbones, Marital Tour of Misguided Medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Well, she's on her grind again.
Who, me?
Nope, not Sydney.
Cooper?
I mean, you are on your grind again, not Cooper. Cooper's doing her thing, sleeping.
She just had a great bath.
And
a great poop.
A great poop, and then a great bath.
And now she is passed out in my arms.
Nah, Gwenny P. On her grind again.
Oh, no. GP.
GP.
That's how she signs her little...
General practitioner, Gwyneth Paltrow, GP.
She's, you know, she doesn't mean that to be misleading. I'm going to give her that. Like, yeah. I don't think she,
nobody
I doubt
uses
she
that
knows.
Term anyway.
Yeah. Well, outside of the U.S., it's used a lot more frequently.
Okay.
But yeah. Yes, Gwyneth Paltrow. This is actually, I'm going to get into how Gwyneth Paltrow is attached to this story by the end. I promise. This is actually an older recommendation of hers, though, that we're going to cover this week.
We're going to go to the boneyard, find some classic deep cuts.
But the reason is that there was a story in the news just this last week or two that sparked this episode. A lot of people had already recommended this topic, so this isn't like out of nowhere. But let's get into it. I want to talk about apitherapy.
Okay.
Apitherapy.
How you fix your apathy.
No.
Okay.
I bet you could figure out that root word. API therapy.
API.
Come on.
Appy.
In reference to.
Oh, well. Like an epi pen.
No, appy. No, API.
Well,
this is going to go nowhere. Well, you're going to Google it and pretend like you knew.
I'm going to Google it. I'm just going to say that having to do with bugs.
Bees.
Having to do with bees. Of or relating to bees.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like bee stuff therapy.
Okay. Bee junk therapy.
Yeah. It broadly refers to the use of any kind of bee product to treat disease.
Okay.
And like I said, there's a recent story that I want to start with, but Stephanie, Annie, Dana, and Brendan have all suggested this topic in the past. It just took us this long to get around to it, so thank you.
Thanks, y'all.
So, like I said, we have talked about honey before. That's not new, and that would be considered a bee product, I think. Probably the primary bee product that...
Yeah, one of the top five bee products
that we use.
I hate to choose favorites, humans. But it's defo up there.
But so I'm not going to go back into honey because we have a whole episode on it. And if you haven't listened to it, the long and short of it is honey actually works for some stuff.
Yeah, it is demulcent.
It's good for wound healing.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, there are some actual medical uses for certain kinds of honey.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to know more about that, we have a whole episode about it.
Go listen to that one.
Yeah.
And if you already listened, download it again, sucker.
But we're not gonna talk about that. I'm gonna talk about the other bee products. So let me tell you this story. This is why this has sparked my interest at this moment. There was a recent case report published that tells the story of a 55-year-old woman in Spain who was receiving regular bee acupuncture treatments. Now, just tell me what you think that means, and you're probably going to be right.
Like acupuncture, except bee using bee stingers to sting the place. Now, accu, I think, means in the right place, right? How are we getting bees to be like, a little to the left, Jerry? Like, so, how are we accu anything with bees?
I found this term, bee acupuncture. Or actually, I also found the term apipuncture. Apipuncture.
Does api, I don't know about the prefix AP. I guess I just did of relating to bees.
Yeah.
But yeah, unless it means completely random as to where you're being stung.
So this woman was receiving bee stings, bee acupuncture treatments for muscle pain. She had a lot of muscular pain, and that is one of, we'll talk about all the things that it is used for, but this is one of the things that it is, and I'm not saying treats, one of the things it is used for. And she had an anaphylactic reaction to the bee stings, and she unfortunately died. There are some complicating factors. The health center where she was having this done, which was not like a hospital or necessarily any kind of doctor's office, just a health center, where she was having this performed, they did not have epinephrine.
Hey, y'all. Hey, y'all. It's Justin. Hi, I'm from America. I do a podcast. That's not to say like we haven't figured out America just by way of introducing myself.
Yeah, no,
are you sure you don't have an EpiPen? So hey, look under the candles. Hey, can we take a second, just dig under the candles and make sure that your bee sting factory does not have an EpiPen in it?
Now,
I know they're pricey, but like,
right? We're not gonna throw too much shade because I can see that happening in the U.S., not because you didn't know or think to have an EpiPen, but because, you know, they're prohibitively expensive for so many people. The life-saving drug that's prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, for sure. That's no doubt. That's a total crime. Let's go ahead and fold that into the startup costs of our freaking bee sting resort.
That's true. They made me have EpiPens on hand when you were, like, just looking at some tarantulas on your TV show.
Yes. So.
And that wasn't, that didn't even really make any sense, but like I did it.
Yeah, you had two EpiPens ready, off
in
camera.
In my holsters. So they didn't have any epinephrine, and it took the ambulance like a half an hour to get there. For, I don't know all the reasons, location, I don't know. But the point is, there were complicating factors. One way or another, though, a woman was receiving what was being called a medical treatment, and she had a predictable reaction. Now, anaphylaxis, and she unfortunately passed away.
Now, this is very sad, and I'm sorry for her family. It's always a tragedy. Is it weird that she had an anaphylactic response, like, if she'd been having this regularly? Isn't this the kind of thing that, like, you do or you don't?
This is actually the kind of, no, this is predictable and can happen.
Go on.
Where you do not have a reaction the first time you're stung by a bee, or even the second time. It can happen if you have continued random exposures to a certain trigger. Some people can develop sensitivity over time and have an anaphylactic reaction.
Mm.
I'm not going to say that it's common. It certainly isn't. But
so if you don't think you're allergic to bees, eventually there could be one that gets you. Is that what you're telling me right now about bees?
It is much more likely in a case like this where you're intentionally repeatedly being exposed to bees. At a random schedule with random doses and all that kind of stuff.
Not a random schedule. It's every Tuesday at 4. Or I can't even be myself unless I've had my bee stings for that week.
And we'll get more into that. But let me take a step back, because if you're interested in bee therapy, there are different bee products that people use and have used for a long time. We talked about the long, long history of honey. Well, honey is not the only bee thing that people have used for health reasons. We talked about bee venom is also called apitoxin, mm-hmm. apitoxin. And it contains some proteins that can trigger an inflammatory response, especially if you're allergic. Obviously, even if you're not allergic to bee stings, you get an inflammatory response. You get like a little red bump and it hurts and it gets swollen. And
it's unpleasant.
Yeah, it's unpleasant. But obviously, it's much worse for some people. There's also propolis, which is a mixture of bee spit and bee wax.
Mm.
And it's used as like a sealant on the hive. Like it seals up all the little holes.
It's kind of like if bees dipped.
It's like a resin.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they like put it all over the hive to like hold it all together.
Okay.
And then there's also royal jelly. You've probably heard of royal jelly.
Yes, I have heard. We got some. We've gotten some for Christmas before.
Yes. And my dad takes it all from us. He hoards all of our royal jelly.
Wild about this stuff.
He is. To use on his face. I think I'm just going to say face.
Probably
I don't want to know where else my dad uses royal jelly.
If he's put it in other places,
let's not talk about that. Let's forget we ever had that part of the conversation.
New episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sawbones.
So royal jelly is a secretion from certain glands in the bee that is fed. It's actually fed. I always thought it was just fed to the queen. It's actually fed to all the bees, but the queens, like, they develop in it. Like, I saw, you can see pictures of this, like little pools of royal jelly with with queen bee larvae in it.
Wow.
Like, developing.
Wow.
So they get, like, a lot. Because I think any bee can become a queen bee if she believes in herself. No, if she...
According to Tyra Banks.
If she can smize, if she models H2T, and if she is submerged in royal jelly when she's a larva.
That's the sequel to... That is the plot of Model Land 2.
God, I can't wait for that book to come out. So these are all these things supposedly have had medical applications for a really long time. Royal jelly, as I've already kind of mentioned, is very popular in skincare. A lot of people say it makes you look younger and your skin firmer and has more elasticity and that kind of thing. There are a lot of alternative medicine sites, for instance, on the internet that will advertise it for everything from allergies to Alzheimer's to menopause to diabetes, sperm production. It's commonly recommended if you are worried about fertility or virility, or you just want more sperm because you like them, royal jelly is recommended for that. There's no clear mechanism of action for this. Like, why would this substance do these things? We don't know. And there's no real strong evidence that any of that works. Propolis is supposedly effective for a couple different things. Oral health, like any kind of dental disorders. Stomach health, any disorders of the stomach. And you know something is sketchy when they just start saying it's good for stomach stuff. It's good for, like, gynecological stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's also recommended for some cancers.
Is it, though? By whom, sister?
By people who don't have any degrees related to medicine.
Oh, so is that so? Are you telling me that degrees or knowledge about medicine is what qualifies someone to advise which medicines you should take?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was there more to that question?
Fair enough. No, that's fair.
I want to focus mainly on BVT, bee venom therapy. Because this was the one that I found the most intriguing, because it seems so counterintuitive. I don't like to get stung by bees.
Okay.
Do you?
My lifestyle is such that...
Have you never been stung by a bee?
No, I have. In my younger days, I definitely was stung by bees. My lifestyle is such that it would need to be... Like, a bee would need to come to our home and have interest in, like, leasing half of my office for, like, a co-working situation. And then eventually I would just accidentally sit on him or something. I don't know the situation that would lead to me being stung by a bee at this point in my life.
Did you ever get yelled at for running around outside without shoes on because you might step on a bee?
And absolutely. And then did. Sometimes.
You stepped on a bee?
Did happen, yeah.
I was yelled at frequently. Well, not yelled at. I was instructed firmly to put on shoes so I didn't step on a bee. Never stepped on a bee. Ran around barefoot a lot.
Yeah, my parents were mainly just jazzed that I was outside.
So bee venom therapy, you can either administer it from the bees directly, or you can get injections of, like, collected bee venom. And it is used even to this day. You'll see people claim that it's good for arthritis. Specifically multiple sclerosis, MS.
Guys.
And then again, you see some people recommending it for cancer. Now, the use of this dates back to ancient times, the ancient Egyptians, the Greeks. It was used in ancient Chinese medicine. It was advised by all the big hitters, Hippocrates, Pliny, Galen, Celsus. Of course, they all agreed on only one use, and that was gout.
Okay.
They all said it was good for gout. Pliny threw in there that he also thought it was probably good for baldness.
Probably, if a bee gets
probably
up there.
Probably, if you get stung on the head by a bee.
It's hard to say. Oh, I see you got stung by a bee. You got a little patch growing in there. It's nice.
He also said honey was good for that, which, I mean, if you're giving me the option.
Between the two.
Honey. And you see, like, throughout all these different recommendations throughout history, mainly for, like, rheumatism. Arthritis, mm-hmm. basically aches and pains and that kind of stuff. You see it used as either like live bee stings. They take like dead bee carcasses and powder them and put them on people.
That's nice.
Take extracts of the venom to inject, and then just even eat like bee just bodies.
Bee bodies.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Or rub them on your joints. I mean, all kinds of variations in this. It was used for acne for a while.
Just to have bees sting your face, which leaves a red welt, right?
And then you can say, oh, it's not acne. It's just bee stings.
Oh, I cured my acne. This is just a lot
These
of
are just
bee stings.
My face is just covered in bee stings.
No acne. What? No. What are you, wild? No. There's no acne here. Look above my face. It's all bees.
They're just highly attractive bee stings.
They're just cool bee stings. Do you see how they form the pattern of a unicorn?
That's and a skull.
Is a skull, because it's very particular.
It's documented that Charlemagne would receive bee sting therapy for gout. There is also some evidence in the 1500s that bee stings were advised for things like kidney stones and like issues urinating. Just get some bee stings.
Just get some bee, get a bee in there. Be a sting.
And you see, as late as like the 1700s, it popped back up as a recommended cure for baldness again.
Okay. Sure.
I really feel like somebody must have gotten stung by a bee and grew some hair later and
at
just
some
threw
point,
off medical science for a long time.
Yeah, like there had to be people for whom this like did pan out in some way. For the legend to be perpetrated that long.
It really started to pick up steam in the 1800s and that's kind of what I want to focus on next.
Okay, tell me.
But before I do that.
Oh, man.
Let's head to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for
the mouth. My name is Ryan, and I love Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
I'm Megan, and I love Sawbones.
I have a genuine love for the investigations of paranormal claims.
No matter what they talk about, no matter how gross it is, no matter what the syndrome or whatever they're talking about, they find a way to make it funny.
It is smart. It's not brutally honest. It's refreshingly honest.
I realized I was listening to almost every podcast you guys put out. The only least I could do was give something back.
I became a Max Fun member because I wanted to support the things that I was getting so much entertainment and joy from.
These are listeners just like you, and they support Sawbones and Oh No, Ross and Carrie with a Max Fun membership. The 2018 Max Fun Drive is April 2nd through 13th, and if you want to support your favorite shows too, it's the best time to sign up or upgrade your membership. Just tune in starting April 2nd, and we'll give you all of the details.
Now, you were about to tell me about some 19th century commotion, R.E. bee venom.
So, in the 19th century, we see the use of bee venom kind of spreading like westward ho. Here comes bee venom.
What's that on the wind?
By then, it was actually interesting. There was folk wisdom that beekeepers never got arthritis. This was like just one of those common like little tidbits. Like, oh, well, you must be a beekeeper. You don't get arthritis. You know, like people say.
Mm-hmm.
When people say that.
Yeah.
About beekeepers.
For sure.
And that was because of this association with getting stung by bees and it being helpful for arthritis. You also started seeing people who were bringing acupuncture to the West doing it with bee therapy, doing it with bees, which at the time I don't know. So I guess this is a good time to kind of describe the way that it developed.
Sure.
Because you said that about like would just randomly get stung by bees. And that's what I envisioned at first, is you just put somebody in a room with a bunch of bees and like hope they get stung.
Mm-hmm.
Like tell them to like insult the bees, maybe throw things, something to make the bees mad.
Call them names. Show them the nudes for more than 5 minutes.
No, but the way that it works is you actually have to hold the bee and lower it down and like place it on the person's skin. And what I read is that as soon as you let go, the bee will have been frightened from, I guess, being held by a very large mammal,
mm-hmm.
and will instantly sting the surface it's landed on.
And then later die.
Yeah. The stingers stay in. They're removed 24 hours later.
Mm.
So you just leave them there for 24 hours.
It's pleasant. But also the bee dies.
Yeah.
After it stings one time, it beefs it.
That's a really terrible... I didn't think about all of the bee fatalities.
Yeah, how about all the bee fatalities?
Yeah.
Also, the next time you want to do it again, you got to go out and catch a bunch more. It's not very fun.
This
hope you got a lot
great.
Of clover fields near your house.
Considering how we're trying to, like, preserve bees...
Yeah, could we not? Maybe send them on kamikaze missions
into
your
butt?
This did
not occur to me until just now. So anyway, so you could go to an acupuncturist and they would... And that's how it would work. They would hold a bee and then it put it on your skin in the place that they wanted to apply. So that's where the accuracy comes in. They could put it in the same places that they would place acupuncture needles.
Okay.
And then it would sting you and then that was it. Certainly you could be more accurate if you were extracting venom from bees and then using needles to inject it.
Okay.
But that wasn't traditionally how it was being done. In 1888, a book was published, a report about a peculiar connection between the bee stings and rheumatism, by Philip Turk, who was an Austrian physician. And this really kind of codified this, like folk medicine tradition that it was being passed down and a lot of people kind of did it, but this was the first time, like it was put in print widely enough that everybody read it and said like, oh, well,
bad. Dumb.
I'm excited by this peculiar connection.
This peculiar connection.
In 1935, Dr. Bodog F. Beck published...
Don't rush on past that little gem, Sidster. Why don't you give it one more pass and give it the relish and oomph it deserves?
Bodog?
Dr. Bodog F. Beck. Guess what the F stands for. Did you guess?
I don't think that's what it stands for.
Francis.
So he brought
Bodog.
Of course he did. Of course Bodog brought it to the US.
Bodog Beck on the sevens and nines got traffic. Bodog Beck.
So he brought it to the US for the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. Then from there, we started seeing another physician, Charles Mraz, start recommending it for the use of autoimmune diseases. And then that's kind of where you saw it spread from like arthritis to specifically like rheumatoid arthritis. And then for, MS and all kinds of diseases of like the joints and connective tissues and that kind of thing. Now here's kind of the theoretical and the real science behind this.
Okay.
Because I think what's unfortunate is the more I read about it, the more I found that there's some really intriguing things about bee venom. It's just that it's not like what we think is true isn't.
It's not a panacea.
Right. Which nothing ever is.
Nothing ever is.
So the idea is that bee venom has anti-inflammatory properties, which is weird considering that it has specifically inflammatory properties. Like mm-hmm. It induces inflammation.
Right.
And that it can block pain receptors as well.
Okay.
And they have seen some of these effects both in vitro and in small animal models. They've seen some ways that it like activates and blocks pain receptors briefly in intriguing patterns, and they're not entirely sure why. And so then that could theoretically, you know, if you just saw that, you might think, oh, well, maybe it'll block pain in a human.
Uh-huh.
So there are some intriguing things about bee venom for sure. But when they've tried to replicate these studies in humans, one, you're not going to find any large scale studies. Like, nobody's doing this head to head with like ibuprofen and seeing what works better or something.
Well, nobody wants to waste all the bees.
And a lot of people don't want to get stung by bees.
Oh, weird.
Huh. And the results typically have not been statistically significant. So you got to be careful. I noticed this in a lot of the studies that at the end they'll conclude that there is something to it. And if you read the numbers, what they saw was a correlation, but the numbers actually... So what you have to calculate in a study is how likely is this to have happened by chance?
Okay.
If there is a difference between the two groups, between the group of patients who got bee venom and the group of patients who didn't.
Which there almost certainly will be of some amount.
How likely is it that this would just have occurred by chance versus actually indicating, mm-hmm. you know, some therapeutic benefit? And the majority of the studies didn't show any like, it was not statistically significant. So it could have just been by chance.
Mm.
And that's also another hard thing to sham treat. Like, if you think about the group of patients who are getting a pill or nothing versus the group of patients who are getting
pinched.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you would have to like apply stings in the wrong place or apply something that you think is a bee sting but isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be very hard. And which acupuncture, it's hard to do that in general. We've talked about that before. It's hard to do sham acupuncture. You just basically are putting needles in the wrong place.
Right.
But I mean, either way, you're getting stuck with needles or stuck with something.
Right.
So it'd be a hard study to blind. And when you start to look at objective results, then you start really seeing a lack of evidence. Anytime they have said there was a difference, it was subjective. Mm. So it was asking people afterwards, do you think you hurt less? And them going, yeah, I think okay. I do. And I'm not saying that people lie.
You guys really gave me a shot in my elbow, right? The bee really stung me in my elbow, right? Because it definitely did feel like my knee. But you guys think the elbow, I believe you.
But we know how
feels good either way.
We know how powerful placebo can be. And if the patients who agreed to this study already believed in bee venom therapy, how likely they may be to experience results one way or the other, which is great, but doesn't mean you should get stung by bees. MS studies have not shown results that it is helpful. And that's really important because you will see a lot of claims to the contrary, that this is used as a treatment for MS. No, yes, people will tell you that and people are falling victim to that, but they have never shown a reduction in the plaques that form on the brain and spinal cord. They've never been able to show any improvement in that in patients who've received bee venom therapy. So even though you will see that lie again and again and again, it's not. There have been patients who subjectively say they think they feel better afterwards,
mm-hmm.
but it's not actually halting the disease process. There have been some shingles patients who got zoster, shingles, and fibromyalgia patients and rheumatoid arthritis patients, again, who've reported subjective improvement, but nothing that we could test or objectively mm-hmm. clock or anything like that. And this is used way more extensively outside the U.S. So you'll see a lot of these studies have been published outside the U.S. and are not being done here. There just aren't as many cases of it here. Mm-hmm. There aren't as many patients who have bought into it at this point. Now, before you start bee venom therapy, you're supposed to challenge the patient to see if they are allergic.
Yes, that seems like a good step.
Not just take their word for it. You're supposed to actually test them for a bee allergy. And bee allergies are pretty rare. So if you're testing and asking, and statistically they're rare, most people are probably going to be okay. But sometimes, as I already mentioned, sensitization can occur, and that can be very unpredictable. So you can have patients who have received weekly treatments for years, and then all of a sudden have an anaphylactic reaction. And I think that's where you have to really come down on if there is this possible risk, even if it's small, then you better have some really compelling benefit if you're going to try a treatment.
Right.
Because all treatments have risks. I mean, that's usually what, at this point, somebody who practices alternative medicine would look at me and say, well, all treatments have risk. Absolutely, they do. But we don't recommend them unless the benefits outweigh the risks. And so far for bee venom therapy, we're not seeing that to be the case. There was a case in 2003 of a 34-year-old man who received bee acupuncture for pain in his back because he had a bulging disc. He had planned 4 sessions. The first time he got 50 stings to his upper back. They were left in for 24 hours and removed. The next week, it was the same treatment. The third week, he got 60 stings to his back and butt. And then on the fourth week, he got 70 stings all up and down his spine. Some number of hours later, he began to experience vomiting and difficulty breathing, and he became severely ill. He had he became hemodynamically unstable, meaning his blood pressure dropped very low. He became unresponsive. He was transferred to the hospital. He was put on a ventilator. Eventually, they were able to get him off, but he was found to have had a hemorrhage in his brain as a result of what was probably like an anaphylactic reaction that was triggered
from all the bee stings.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. In 2011, a 35-year-old woman receiving bee venom therapy for multiple sclerosis developed liver injury. She came in severely jaundiced and was in possible liver failure. She was treated and recovered. But I think when you see these cases, and I'm, you know, so far I have not seen any compelling evidence that it works.
Right.
Why would you do that? And again, this was endorsed a few years ago on Goop by Gwyneth Paltrow herself. She puts these little notes on some of the articles, like if she actually tried the therapy and is like, hey there, kiddos, I use bee venom therapy for
GP.
Pain. Yeah, well, she signs them GP for some pain I was having, and it just worked great. And so now I'm going to tell you all about bee stuff. So she has endorsed it, saying she used it herself and that it was helpful. What I kind of alluded to.
I want to invent a new thing, and I think this is going to really catch on. It's called Gwynecdotal evidence, and
I like that.
Thank you. And basically, what it means is Gwyneth Paltrow says something worked, and there's no other evidence. Then you have Gwynecdotal evidence.
There have been. This is what I was saying. There have been some studies in recent years. These were published, I think, in 2014, where researchers actually isolated the components of bee venom that seemed to have some positive effects. They synthesized them. And so in doing this, by taking out the things that you think are helpful and then creating them synthetically, you're removing all that bad crap that keeps hurting people, which is like, I mean, key if you're developing a do the least harm therapeutic, you know, treatment. So they synthesized these compounds and they started using them against cancer cells, actually delivered by nanoparticles.
Okay.
Yeah. They've actually found some ways to create like nano bees.
Yes.
To deliver these compounds.
Oh my God. I was feeling so disheartened. And then this episode really turned it around at the end with the presence of nano bees.
Yes. And they found some evidence that they were effective in
obviously targeting nanobees. Are you kidding
cancer
me?
Cells. Now, of course, these compounds could do.
No, stop right there.
Wait, no. This is also good. This is all good science. These compounds could do damage to healthy cells, just like any chemotherapy could.
I didn't want to hear that about nanobees.
That's where the nanoparticles come in. The nanobees are they're like smart bees. They deliver it directly to the cancer cells, which is, I mean, that's where we're trying to get with cancer therapy, right? Better at targeting the bad cells and less destruction of the good cells, which means less side effect and less damage to the body. Mm-hmm. And they have found some intriguing in vitro studies. So the next step are animal studies and then human studies. This is a long way off, but I think this is an example where
a volunteer's tribute to get the nanobees.
I think this is a really great example of where there is a truth in all this. There is a real scientific truth that we could all be really fascinated and excited by. But when it's covered up with all this junk, with all this pseudoscientific junk, and people who are exploiting that for financial gain, because if you think all of these people who are administering bee venom therapy are doing it for free out of the kindness of their hearts.
They ain't.
No. And I think that's unfortunately, it hides what might be a really fascinating scientific discovery underneath. And it can be really hard, even as a physician, somebody with like a medical background, to wade through all that to try to figure out what the truth is.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have any, you know, medical background or scientific training, it's almost impossible to figure out what is true and what is not. And that's It's very frustrating.
I guess what we come back to is the nanobees will fix everything. So thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of Nanobees, a new podcast that's just about nanobees now. We hope you enjoyed it. Sorry, did you have something else you want to say?
I was going to say that I think that the bottom line is please don't get stung by bees intentionally. I mean, I'd rather you not even get stung by bees accidentally because that hurts. But if you were considering being intentionally stung by bees, my advice would be don't.
So back to nanobees. Thank you to all the nanobees that listen to this show. That's so cool. It makes me feel really cool that I made something that y'all would like. Next week's the Max Fun Drive is going to kick off. It's going to be fun. We got some cool episodes lined up. We're going to have gifts. We're going to have great gags. We're going to have just a joyous time as a family. And if you like Sawbones and you want to support us, this is it, folks. This is the moment. This is the time. So get pumped. Get psyched. We've got great stuff for you for the whole 2 weeks, and we hope you enjoy it.
You know you were going to get a lot of mileage the next time you're out with your buddies and you start telling them about nanobees. So
thank you. Yes. Thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use the song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. And thanks to you. You're just the best. Thank you. That is going to do it for us this week. So until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head. Unless it's with nanobees. If you get a bunch of nanobees.
No.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.